And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Monday, September 6th. Welcome to Football and Grits, the Athletics SEC football podcast. Welcome to this week's show. I am your host, David Ubben, as always, with my co-host, Andy Staples, on the Andy Staples and Friends feed. I hope you all had a better weekend than Indiana's, or should I say Indania's equipment guy.
Great googly moogly.
The first weekend of football.
Who are the chefs?
The first weekend of football. Andy, I got to say, I think I'm getting soft in my old age. I was getting a little emotional watching Wisconsin fans jump around, and props to Fox for devoting an entire segment on the broadcast to show it in full. Soundtracked, of course, by the GOAT, Gus Johnson, who's more polarizing than I thought. But when he said, it's been 651 days, I got a little lump in my throat. This weekend was just really great. You had fans, non-conference games. It felt a little more normal. I think college football is a sport most impacted by crowds. And there were some special ones, at Wisconsin, not to get on the Big Ten horse, but the smiles on the players' face on the sidelines. I've got a story coming out this week talking about, hey, fans really did change the game. Players waving towels. I'm verklempt thinking about it, even though Camp Randall turned into a house of pain by the end of the game. The last 2 years have been terrible, Andy. Saturday was not terrible. But this is an SEC show. Let's get to some Southern Fried football.
Well, but the thing is, it was the same in the SEC venues. It looked normal. Mm-hmm. It felt normal. Mm-hmm. It looked like... Now, the results were pretty much what you'd expect. I think other than LSU losing to UCLA the way they did, like losing to them, mm-hmm. I think I would have understood. Losing them the way they did, not so much. But everything looked fairly normal, I guess, with the exception of that and Vandy, East Tennessee State.
Yeah, Vandy fans take offense to that, Andy. but no, Andy, on the subject of Southern Fried football, you are not allowed to fry your banana peel before you eat it this week. When is that going down?
So
when should fans
Friday's episode. Ari and I pay off our bets on Friday's episode. We make our bets on Friday's episodes. So this is when I need to pay it off. I've got some bananas now. I worry they will be too brown. They need to be fairly brown. But I worry they're going to be too brown by then. So I think I'm going to buy some more bananas tomorrow and have them ripening further. So we'll have something in the right range when we get to Thursday when we record that episode. And I'm telling you, I don't know what's going to happen. I think it'll be better for me than the mayonnaise. I don't think it's going to be entirely pleasant, but I don't think my body is just going to completely reject it. So I'm not as scared as I was about the mayonnaise one.
Well, Andy, you might need some antacid or not, but should we start with the folks who are still partying from Saturday night, or should we start with the folks who could use some antacid as they turn the page to week two?
Let's get happy and then get sad.
All right. That sounds good. That sounds good. Number one on my list, Andy, of the folks that are still partying from Saturday night, the Million Dollar Man, he had a lot of hype. Bryce Young, Alabama quarterback, a lot of expectation. I kind of felt a little bad for him. Because some of it, I think Bryce Young's great. I think, again, I've said this on this show, I think if I had to bet that he could be the number one pick in the draft and or the Heisman winner, I think he can do both of those things. And I think it's more likely that he will than he won't at some point in his career. That's a lot. I can't help that that's how I feel, but that's a lot for a young guy. But he surpassed maybe even the highest expectations against the Miami team. Secondary is not fantastic, but set a ton of records in his debut. Four touchdowns, 344 yards, both records for first-time starters at Alabama, their first game. He's now the betting favorite for the Heisman Trophy. The defensive front didn't get to him much, but other than Georgia, I'm not sure how many fronts are going to give him trouble with Alabama's offensive line. Andy, do you have a bone to pick with any of his 11 incompletions, or what did you make of his
no.
debut?
So I was watching the first few series and thinking, okay, is this a case where if he's playing against a better defensive line, they're going to bring him down when he's running around back there? And the more I watch, the more I think, no, they're not, because what he's doing is not necessarily by design, but it's very much under control. Like, you watch him running around, he's aware of where the line of scrimmage is at any given time. You know, he's not running. Yeah, he's not running to be running. He's running to set up a better throw for himself. Mm-hmm. And he's just so, he's so good at, because I don't think it's just raw speed. Because in terms of raw speed, Haynes King or Anthony Richardson might be faster among SEC quarterbacks.
Definitely.
But he's got the sixth sense thing going in the pocket, and he's fast. And so that was what I was amazed by, is he had forever to throw, not just because they were blocking well. Even if somebody got through, he would kind of go find a spot, reset, reevaluate everything, and hit a wide open person. I mean, because it's hard for a defense to cover that long. And so he buys himself time, and all the other thing he does is buys his receivers time, because if you're playing man, you just cannot cover for that long. I don't care how good you are.
Yeah, and Alabama, it helps that their receivers are better than all of Miami's corners as well.
That, I mean, that does not hurt.
There were a few times I felt bad for him.
The thing is, Miami's got pros on the defense. Let's not act like this was Kent State, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what made this more impressive. That defense has pros on it. That team has pros on it. That team is not a bad team. They are going to win more than they lose, probably mm-hmm. finish in the top third of the ACC, and they had no chance. It looked like a game against a JV team.
Yeah. I'm not sure Alabama broke a sweat in that ball game. I think I did feel bad for him. You know, it's hard trying to decide which wide open receiver you want to hit. And he seemed to tackle that decision, you know, pretty well.
Who else is still partying in the SEC?
I got Kirby Smart. He was not shy about how big this game was. You know, he was clear. Everything's still in front of this Georgia team. I think this was a bigger game for Georgia than it was for Clemson, honestly.
It was a bigger game for the SEC in general. Breathing room. Like, it bulldozes a path open for two SEC teams to make the playoff. It doesn't mean they will, but the path is open.
And, Andy, I'm going to whisper this. Three teams?
No. Not going to happen.
So you're telling me that if Alabama goes undefeated...
I realize this is an SEC podcast. I think you're pandering to our audience, David. Pander.
Listen. I'm just saying, okay, let's sketch this path out.
All right, do it.
Georgia goes undefeated. They lose a close game to an undefeated Alabama. Okay. Texas A&M goes 11-1, loses to Alabama. And then you have Ohio State or Oregon, or basically there's only one other team left standing. I have a hard time believing that you're not going to have three teams in the SEC sitting there. I don't think it's going to happen, but if that's the scenario, it's going to happen.
By the way, if that happened, because you realize the whole 12-team playoff, they're going to slow that down. They've basically scrapped that, and they're going to go back to the drawing board.
That might happen tomorrow if that happens.
Because they don't want to do what the mean old SEC wants them to do. What? They will beg for anything that isn't this if the SEC gets three teams in.
Listen, a lot of things have to fall in place for that to happen, but that's the funniest possible scenario for this season. But you're right. It does really open up the path for the SEC in a lot of ways. But, you know, again, I think Clemson now has basically no margin for error. And even if they go undefeated, there's a world in which they could be squeezed out because they're not going to have a lot of quality wins. We'll see what North Carolina offers.
North Carolina's got to get to them. North Carolina's already one game behind in the Coastal. So let's not get too crazy about that. And here's the other thing. Clemson, any situation that gets Clemson compared to Georgia blocks Clemson. So what Clemson mm-hmm. needs now is chaos everywhere else. They need Oklahoma to lose mm-hmm. at least one or maybe a couple, and after the Tulane game, okay.
I was an Oklahoma skeptic going into the season.
See, I wasn't. I was surprised by that. I thought that was pretty shocking because they.
I will say I think Tulane's good.
I do too, but not, they're not that good. Like. Minnesota and Ohio State, the way Minnesota fought Ohio State, I'm looking at Minnesota like, okay, you can compete with Iowa and Wisconsin. Like, you're built for that. That's mm-hmm. So I understand mm-hmm. why you were in the game with Ohio State. It doesn't make me think less mm-hmm. of Ohio State. That did make me think less of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, on Kirby, you know, he's jumping on the bench. He's pumping his fists. He's rallying the crowd after that game. He was not shying away from how big that was and how well his team.
That's the game he wants. He wants football to look like that. He wants to bring that back. And I hate to break it to him. Football doesn't look like that anymore most of the time. You're not going to be able to hold Alabama to 3.
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, Andy, what is your concern level on the Georgia offense? They're playing Clemson, who top 3 or 4 defense in the country, probably. But what's your concern level?
Not that high, because you've got
Darnell Washington
out. Kyrus Jackson not playing offensive snaps because of an injury. You got a freshman tight end that you're throwing to quite a bit. All of these things can be dealt with. They're going to find playmakers. Guys are going to fit into roles because they are so deep and absurdly talented on that roster. And they'll find ways to use the backs a little more, I think. And yes, they will. Alabama's the only other team they're going to see this season, possibly. Not on the schedule. But the only other team, and I'm talking about the playoff as well, that has a defensive line as good as Clemson's. And Alabama's mm-hmm. might not be as good as Clemson's, though I think it might be.
Other than Georgia's own practices.
Right. Well, Alabama with Dale and Tim Smith and Will Anderson, I think they're fairly comparable. So this is the only time you're going to see that level of talent up front, which leads me to believe you're going to be able to run the ball a little. And even think about it. By the fourth quarter, they were gaining yards on the ground. They had punched some holes in that Clemson defensive line, which is very mm-hmm. hard to do. So, no, I'm not that worried about Georgia's offense. I'm worried that they need to get it running at a very high capacity by the time they play whoever if they make the SEC championship game. And, you know, we don't know how tough the Florida game will be right now. You know, Florida played FAU. We didn't get to see much other than now there's a quarterback controversy that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
But I feel very confident with Georgia. Like, who's going to push them? Kentucky could push them a little bit if Kentucky's offense is better, but they're going to stress Kentucky's offense because that's Kentucky's offense is going to work against almost everybody, but it's not going to work against that Georgia defense because they're just not going to be able to move those guys.
Well, here's where I'm with you. I think ultimately the combination of you're playing Clemson, I think in week one, more often than not, defenses win out.
Oh, I think we saw that across the country.
Yes, I think so. Timing is so key. You've been off, obviously. And then, of course, when you have that much disrupted, it throws everything off. So I'm mildly concerned. I'd say I'm a 4 or 5 on the Georgia offense concern scale. I think they'll be fine. I don't know that I'd be floored if they don't take the leap that people expect. But I talked about this in our roundtable last week. But here's what concerns me with Georgia is the reason why Alabama is in a class of their own is because they don't have bad games. When's the last time you could say Alabama just came out flat? They don't. They just destroy everyone.
Ole Miss?
Georgia, yeah, legitimately. Georgia plays its food a little bit.
Yeah.
They did it last year. Georgia doesn't do the same thing.
But I will tell you, David, quite as just every single week. We've only got one data point right now. But if Georgia's defense plays every game the way they played Saturday night's game against Clemson,
10 points is
going to
win every
Georgia, game. Georgia is going to be 12-0 going to the SEC championship. And they are going to make the playoff regardless of what happens in the SEC championship game. I think.
I agree with you. That's
one of the most dominant. Okay, I'm trying to think. I don't want to get too hyperbolic here, but I'm probably going to. I will argue that that is the most dominant defensive performance we have seen since post Nick Saban basically changing everything for college football and deciding, you know what, I'm going to go with this kind of offense too. Like, defenses have just not been able to dominate good teams like that. When's the last time you saw a superpower team get held to 3 points?
Yeah, I think that the Ohio State-Clemson playoff game jumps out.
2016.
I think this Clemson
2016, not the one last.
Yeah,
like last year. Yeah, that's last true. Year Ohio State bombed Clemson in the Sugar Bowl, but Clemson still scored points.
Yeah, but I'm saying I think it's different because this Clemson offense is a lot better than that Kelly Bryant offense.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we saw DJ throw.
This is another animal.
Yeah, we saw DJ throw for 400 against Notre Dame last year. They lost that game, but yeah. It was an overtime game. That was a playoff team.
I think you're probably right. I don't think there's one that jumps out. You know, both defenses brought it. It's amazing that a defensive scorer decided that ball game, but Georgia was the better team.
And that's what Bryce Young, and that's where he, I think, becomes very interesting. You know, because he might be able to move around enough to keep from getting just obliterated by Georgia's defense. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Elsewhere in the SEC East, Andy, I think as the saying goes, the best laid plans of mice and men go perfectly. Will Levis and Kentucky, they bring in new quarterback, obviously Will Levis. You add Wandell Robinson from Nebraska. And the biggest piece, Liam Cohen, from the Los Angeles Rams to modernize Kentucky's offense. They struggled to start early on. Will Levis, I think it was his first pass attempt, maybe it was his second. Tip ball over the middle. Gets picked off. Monroe runs on the field, scores. They go up 7-0, their first lead since 2019. I'm thinking, But he and Wandell Robinson are an incredible duo. You know, again, it's amazing that you can bring in Liam Cohen, you bring in a transfer quarterback, you bring in Robinson, and there you go. You know, Monroe is a very bad team, but he looked incredible, and more than a few SEC teams played bad teams yesterday, Andy, and they didn't have a quarterback for over 367 and four touchdowns. I was very high on Kentucky coming into this season, and I am still pretty high on how that offense looked. I think Kentucky is going to be a factor in that, and they're going to be a problem for teams.
Well, I mean, let's just think about Kentucky. They ran the ball really well last year when defenses knew they could not possibly throw. So that tells you they've got a good offensive line, and that tells you that Chris Rodriguez is a hell of a tailback. So you add not just a functional, but probably a very good passing game on top of that.
Above average, top 30.
Yeah, above,
SEC
above
right
average.
Now,
that's a good way of putting it. Above average. And we'll see, because they're playing Missouri this week. So that's a pecking order game. We'll see where everybody falls after this. But I feel like, think about this. That makes it easier to run. It makes it easier on the defense because they're not running back out after a quick three and out. There's so much that Kentucky improved upon by improving that facet of the offense that it makes it the degree of difficulty for beating Kentucky goes up significantly more than the sum of what they added, the parts they added.
Well, like if they get down 10-0 in a game this year,
it's not over. Yeah,
I don't think it's not that big of a deal. I think they still got a shot. Last year, it was like, well, You better hope it doesn't become 17-0, because then this is really over and you're going to be in real trouble. Kentucky's the most fascinating team to me, I think, really in the entire conference, because this is just something we have not seen before. I think yesterday on Twitter I compared it to Happy Gilmore learning how to putt. Like, it's very, like, I'm just excited to see what their potential is, because they've been a really good team for a while, a team that you just didn't really want to play. You knew you had to buckle your chin strap when you played Kentucky, and now adding this dynamic offense, you know, again, we'll see how many teams they can do this against. Again, Monroe is a really poor judge, but Levisman was hitting some deep balls that he just looked really, really, really good. I'm excited. If I'm a Kentucky fan, I am over the moon, and I feel really good going to that Missouri
game.
Yeah,
and I was going to say, are Penn State fans upset that they let Will Levis go? Sean Clifford hit some deep balls, too, for the Nittany Lions, but Will Levis looked really good.
When you beat Wisconsin on the road, you can get it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Ask him again in October.
I'm hoping this becomes like a Dwayne Haskins, Joe Burrow situation where everybody winds up happy and good. And you know, I'm not talking about Haskins' NFL career, but he did set Big Ten records and become a first-round pick. And so everybody mm-hmm. looked okay coming out of that decision. So we'll see if that happens. But no, the fun Kentucky offense really does change the dynamics. Now, we will find out this week what that means, because mm-hmm. Missouri didn't look great against a Jim McElwain-less Central Michigan, but the defense held, and it looks like they're going to be okay. But again, we don't know much from that either. We will know a lot more after that game in Lexington this week.
Yeah, and week one, teams lie to you all the time.
Oh, 100%.
It's every single year. Another guy partying this week, Andy. I asked the inimitable Josh Kendall for the correct pronunciation. It is Mr. Zebuliah Noland. Not a biblical name.
Zebuliah?
Named for a mountain
That's
man.
That's like Tathan.
Zebuliah.
Because like Zebulon.
Yeah, it is like Tathan.
See, here's the thing. I had an Uncle Zeke. Like, I've known people named Zeb, which is short for Zebulon.
I have not.
Like, Zeke is short for Ezekiel. Zeb is short for Zebulon. I just assumed it was short for Zebulon. Zebuliah?
Is Zebulon a common name? I've never heard this in my
Zebulon
life.
Zebulon is not a common name, but it is a biblical name. It is, people are named Zebulon. Like, Pike's Peak, the mountain peak in Colorado?
Yes.
Named after Zebulon Pike.
There you go.
So, okay.
Well, Zebuliah, not a biblical name.
That's like Tathan. That is like the biblical version of Tathan.
Yeah. Anyway, Zebuliah, named for a, and I quote, a mountain man my dad knew. Now, that's a story we need to dig
into. So, mountain man's mom and dad probably meant to name him Zebulon. And just got it wrong. Mixed up Jebediah and Zebulon, and that's how you get Zebuliah.
You might be right. I think I'm curious on what the conversation, like, I guess I need to know more about the relationship between his dad and this said mountain man. Was this like an ayahuasca-filled dream that he dreamed him up? Were they like lifelong friends? Was this someone that he ran into on a trail? I have a lot of questions. Either way, what I don't have a lot of questions for is he had a great Saturday. We'll see what the future of the South Carolina quarterback position is. I feel very strongly it's probably still Luke Doty's job when he gets back. But he gets on the field, Zebuliah, 4 touchdowns against an overmatched Eastern Illinois team. But what a story. What an experience. And I will say, like Shane Beamer said last week, it's important to note that it's not like he had been off the field for 2 or 3 years. He played games this spring at North Dakota State, started 7 games. So he's actually played more recently than any other guy on his roster. But the GA to starting quarterback move is something that I have never seen, and I'm not sure we may ever see again. So I tip my cap to Mr. Zebuliah Noland.
There's very little more you can say. Quarterbacks from the state of South Carolina starting in the state of South Carolina, like starting in the state within the state lines yesterday, just kicked ass. Between the game in Columbia, South Carolina, and the game in Clinton, South Carolina, not very far apart. We're only talking about 40 minutes apart. 14 touchdown passes thrown by the two starting quarterbacks.
Mr. Kevin Kelly, the great, he's an Arkansan legend, to say the least. I was talking to some folks about him not a few weeks ago. Very excited to see what he does at Presbyterian Big Pig. They don't play a FBS team this year, Andy. I was very sad. They usually play like Wake.
Yeah, they've gone non-scholarship, so you're never going to get to see that again. They're in the Pioneer League now, so they're playing Stetson, they're playing Drake, they're playing Butler. You're not going to see that anymore.
I imagine there's a lot of guys named Zebulai in the Pioneer League. Maybe I'm just...
Because they're Pioneers? Yeah. No, you're not going to see Kevin Kelly. Unless Kevin Kelly gets another job, you're not going to see him against an FBS team.
I like his odds of getting another job, I got to say. Speaking of jobs, Andy, there's some antacid to go around across the conference this week. Oh, we got to start with Coach O. You know, he won the national championship, and people still were not all in on Coach O. He still had to deal with the detractors. And after going out to the Rose Bowl and losing, I don't think he did much to shed the Gene Chizik comparisons. Two things on this not great debut. One, I actually think UCLA might be really good. I got to say, I'm not as high on LSU as you are, but I think LSU's really
good. Oh, I'm not high on LSU anymore. They're making me eat a banana, peel and all. They're pretty much dead to me, David.
Okay, fair enough. I wrote last night, I'm not going to be shocked if we see UCLA make a serious run at a Pac-12 title. LSU's a good team, but when you start in the top 15, you're coming off a 5-5 season and you overhaul the coaching staff. 7-5, 8-4 is not going to do it at LSU. And you look at their schedule, they still have Florida. They go to Ole Miss. They go to Alabama. The Aggies to close. They're going to be underdogs in at least three of those. That's a lot of losable games. And then, of course, you're in the SEC. You know, you're playing, you know, Mississippi State. You can lose to them in theory. It's not good. What do you make of Orgeron's situation?
Well, they just need to get better, and we'll see if they can. We'll see if these coaches that they've hired can pull them out of the spin here. Defensively, they just need to play their assignments better. I mean, they were getting killed on crossers yesterday. It's not complicated. They just need to be better. They need to communicate more. They need to tackle better. And then offensively, the offensive line needs to generate a push against athletes that aren't as good as them. And they just need to get up and snap the ball. And that's on coaching. That's not just on the players. Like they're looking to the sideline, they're making adjustments till about 3 seconds left in the play clock. When you are the physically superior team, just get up and snap the ball, and then keep getting up there and snapping the ball, because eventually you're going to hit something short and confidence building, and Kayshon Boutte or somebody like that is going to break a tackle and turn it into a huge play, and then go get up and snap the ball. Like they were looking back, looking around, giving UCLA time to stem and change looks and freak out Max Johnson. Snap the ball.
Well, here's my question. I agree with you on paper that LSU is the physically dominant team, but they didn't look like it when I watched the game.
Because they're playing slow.
I mean, how much of a concern is that?
That's the problem. They were playing now. It's more of a concern on defense because that's.
They were getting pushed around.
Right, that's a different story. But offensively, they were playing slow and tentative. And when you play slow and tentative, you can't be as good as you are physically. So just stop playing.
They were getting
slow.
A lot of blitz packages.
Don't overcomplicate it. You know, and I realize UCLA is throwing the kitchen sink at them. Do you know what stops teams from throwing the kitchen sink at you? Tempo. So go faster and. They have the capability of it. They're not huddling, so they don't need. You don't need to get them in the perfect play every time. You have better athletes. It doesn't have to be perfect.
I think I'm with you. Here's where it's interesting, Andy. Certainly had some conversations last night. Jimbo Fisher. Texas A&M owes him a lot of money, fully guaranteed. But are you and our listeners aware of how much Jimbo Fisher owes Texas A&M if he leaves tomorrow?
$0.
$0 is the correct answer. Ding, 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 ding. That's a ways down the pipe. But I'm a little nervous if I'm an Aggie.
I'm not.
I don't like the contract for the Aggies.
If I'm Jimbo Fisher, I'm not leaving for LSU. If LSU ends up firing Ed Orgeron, whenever that is, this close to a national title, I'm not touching that if I'm Jimbo Fisher.
Well, here's the devil's advocate here. I think I agree with you, just big picture. I think if I'm Jimbo, I'm probably not leaving either. Oil money is good. But he had a recruiting advantage. He was the only team in Texas. There's about to be some other Texas team coming in, the Longhorns. You lose that edge in recruiting. If you're at LSU, it's a little different.
Eh.
Does that matter?
Not to me. Because if I'm better, I'm going to go into Louisiana and get those kids anyway.
Well, but they don't grow up going. They don't grow up wearing A&M stuff in New Orleans, Andy.
Yeah, and all those Louisiana players that have helped Alabama the last 10 years didn't grow up rooting for Alabama either.
That's fair, but Texas A&M's not Alabama yet. They haven't won anything yet.
Okay, well, eventually Nick Saban's not going to be the coach at Alabama anymore.
Debatable. You can't prove to me he's not immortal.
That's
Andy.
True. That's true. Maybe his head in a jar just coaching. But
yes.
But that's the thing. I if I'm Jimbo Fisher, I stay right where I am because you can get the right circumstances together to win national titles at A&M. It doesn't matter that Texas is coming into the league. It really doesn't. Because that assumes that Texas is going to figure out how to get it right. And that's a big assumption.
Well, but they don't have to get it right to take a bite of your pie. That's the concern.
It's a big old state. And Jimbo has done the thing that other coaches at Texas A&M didn't do. And that is, I'm not going to take every player from Texas. Like, the assumption at Texas and at A&M, and this has changed in both places, was that you had to take everybody you could from Texas, and if all things were equal, you take the Texas player. It's not that way anymore. They're just going to go get the best players they can get.
Yeah. I think, you know, gun to my head, if this goes sideways for Orgeron down the line, I think Billy Napier is the guy.
I would think so. And look, I don't, I'm not.
It seems so obvious.
I'm not completely bailing on Ed Orgeron yet. I'm not ready to do that. I just think that they need to figure this out. If they don't figure it out this year, then yeah, you need to ask some very serious questions. Because there's just no excuse for this. You're better than UCLA. Like, you should not be getting pushed around and beat. Like, I can understand if you get beaten. Like, if they hit a couple, you know, kind of fluky plays and they beat you by one. Right. UCLA straight up whipped them. There's no excuse for that at LSU. None.
Well, a lot of antacid to go around after a pretty spicy bowl of gumbo coming back from L.A. For the Tigers.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Andy, down in your neck of the woods, you've been higher on Emory Jones than I have been this offseason. I kind of said I needed to see more. After the game, Dan Mullen said Emory Jones is their quarterback, but I liked a lot of what I saw from Anthony Richardson. So did the crowd at the Swamp.
Oh, there are some concerning fan base, interceptions. The fan base is in. The fan base is ready for the Anthony Richardson era to start now.
Yes, Cam 2.0. Listen, Richardson popped. The hurdle he had was incredible. The 75-yard touchdown run was, I mean, he's fast.
He stole someone's soul with a stiff arm as well.
It's kind of like, okay. Yeah, yeah. Listen, those are some highlight plays. This Florida Atlantic. How much, if you're Dan Mullen, what are you doing this week?
You are giving them probably equal snaps with the first team and playing them equal snaps against USF because you're going to win that game and just, whoever's better, that's who you start against Alabama. I'm serious. Give them both a chance, and then pick the one who gives you the chance to beat Alabama.
I liked what I saw from Anthony Richardson. We haven't seen a ton from him. That was the first time I'd really seen him play in that second half or fourth quarter.
Yeah. He played very little last year. And what's interesting is he's a hometown guy. You know, Eastside High School, mm-hmm. Gainesville hasn't had that since Doug Johnson's the last Gainesville quarterback to start at Florida that I can recall. And, you know, there's something about being the hometown guy and the pressure that comes with that. But yeah, this guy looks really good. And, you know, Emory, we'll see what he does, because he's going to get another shot. This is not over. He's going to start against USF. He may just have a great game, and it's just like,
who's really struggling.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, the interception in the end zone is where I think everybody sort of it raised the red flag. Like, okay, you're going to stare this guy down and then throw it right at the DB? Like, in the red zone? Don't do that. So, we'll see. It's a first start. It may get better next week, or it might not. Anthony Richardson may come in. Here's the thing. We don't know about Anthony Richardson as a passer. It may be that he's not entirely accurate or you know, not exactly what you want yet. In which case, that's fine. You keep starting Emory Jones, and then you do the Chris Leak, Tim Tebow thing with them. I mean, mm-hmm. Listen, Anthony Richardson is going to be a weapon in the run game, whether he's the starting quarterback or not.
Big old dude.
Yeah. I mean,
6'4",
you try to tackle that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. I mean, ultimately, I think you can win ball games with both of those guys. It's a decent problem.
Can you beat
Alabama?
I'm not sure
either one of those guys can come close to beating.
Can you beat Alabama? Can you beat Georgia? Because you've got to do that. If you lose to Alabama, then Georgia becomes an absolute must win, which it probably was anyway, because Georgia's schedule makes mm-hmm. it that way. But mm-hmm. you have no margin for error whatsoever if you can't beat Alabama, and then. Look, nothing we've seen suggests that Florida will be able to, but if that guy is special, either one of those guys, that's what elevates you when you don't have the number of five stars they have. That's the difference.
It's not the same, but it's a little bit like the Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence situation.
Oh, it's
that
very
if you
similar.
Feel like this guy's upside is huge, and they're not that different right now. Yep. But you feel like the upside with the younger guy is there. You got to make that decision. And that was a really tough decision for Dabo. And it cost him a really good quarterback.
Well, Emory's
but
already
I don't think anybody in retrospect would say it was the
Emory's
wrong
already
one.
Redshirted, but with the blanket eligibility waiver from last season, he would have two more years to play. And mm-hmm. no one would – I don't think anybody would begrudge him anything if he decided he wanted to go somewhere else if he didn't win the starting job. But the thing is – he doesn't have to go anywhere else, because it's not like Kelly Bryant, where Kelly Bryant didn't redshirt and needed to preserve that other year, or he doesn't get to play any more college football. So if mm-hmm. if you make a change, it doesn't really change anything. Like, Emory Jones does not have to leave if they make a change. You still have him as the backup if you need him. And yeah. So that's the difference in the dynamics there. Because when the Trevor Lawrence thing happened, Kelly Bryant hadn't redshirted. That was the first year of the four-game redshirt rule. Kelly had to stop playing right then if he wanted to play another year of college football. Emory Jones will have 2 years after this year. He cannot redshirt this season because he's already redshirted. So it doesn't matter whether he stays or goes at this point. So, mm-hmm. But the other piece of that is it gives Dan Mullen a lot more freedom. He doesn't have to politicize this thing. All he has to do is make That's the true. Decision for who he thinks is the best quarterback to lead the offense.
I just don't know if you can make that decision week to week, though. You have to go down one
well,
road.
Yes, and I think you have, but you have the perfect opponent this coming week to take a look, because you're not going to lose the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, they're bad.
That's true.
So you're not going to lose that game. So give the guys a chance, and after the game, you know, week. We're recording this on a Sunday. A week from now, you decide who you think gives you the best chance to beat Alabama, and that's who you roll with.
I think I'm with you. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting week in Gainesville. Andy, there was an SEC chant in Nashville on Saturday night. The problem was it was inside the East Tennessee State locker room. Basically a nightmare for Clark Lee's debut. No SEC team had lost to an FCS opponent since South Carolina lost to Citadel in 2015. Vanderbilt, they didn't do much of anything well. They provided the biggest blooper of the weekend, at least across the SEC. The ball slips out of Ken Seal's hand, trying to throw a pass. Boys from Etsu run it back for a touchdown to basically steal the game. Losing by 20 is bad. Outscoring, you know, getting scoring 3 points. There's basically nothing positive to take away from this. Outrushed 179-85 against East Tennessee State. Their only points, a 53-yard kick. They didn't have a turnover until the fourth quarter, Andy. They just got beat by an FCS team, and not a particularly good one. I mean, after last year of Andy, Clark Lee, kind of similar to Josh Heupel, and then it feels like a year zero in Nashville. But this is something we just have not seen in the conference in a while, and not really inspiring a whole lot of confidence. What did you make of the Commodores' debut?
Well, that's the part we've got to figure out is they will try to lay this at the feet of Derek Mason, and maybe they'd be right. Maybe there's nobody on the roster who can even compete with East Tennessee State. But they will have to prove that they can stock the roster. And this was actually a problem when Mason got the job, too. Mason was coming off being a defensive coordinator in a very successful program, Stanford. And you remember, they were a mess early on in his first year as he kind of learned how to be a head coach. Mm-hmm. Maybe Clark Lee doesn't know how to be a head coach yet. Maybe there's a lot of...
Wouldn't be the first one.
Maybe there's a lot of that just the stuff of making all the decisions that isn't natural to him. And he's got to figure that out. But the good news is, it's Vandy. It is year zero, like you said. If you want to do the... I'll give them some free PR advice, since I think they let go of a lot of their PR staff this offseason. You do blame Derek Mason for this now. Whether that's true or not, mm-hmm. you blame him and say...
Well, but how do you do that without seeming like you're making excuses?
Well, you're making excuses. Doesn't it is matter. An excuse. You just lost to East Tennessee State, and they look better. Like, it wasn't fluky.
Yeah.
Like, you make all the excuses you can, because what happens is Clark Lee needs to be able to go into a bunch of living rooms and say, he needs to more artfully say what Charlie Weiss said at Kansas.
Pile of crap.
There's a much more artful way to say that. But basically, you can start for us tomorrow. Can you do what the kid who's going to that quarterback who's going to Rutgers? Can you do that? Can you leave now and come play next week? We could use you.
That's a rough one. On the antacid list this week, Andy, we do have a winner. Mike Leach did not lose. He got a little bailed out because Louisiana Tech, who apparently doesn't watch college football, I guess, played for a 46-yard kick that it might have been blocked. It came up really short. It was kind of a knuckler. But they're down 20. They score on three straight possessions to win by a point. Louisiana Tech should be a decent team, but this is... I'm gonna go silver lining on you, Andy. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with that? Alpha 1 point come from behind win over Louisiana Tech.
I'm ready for it.
This is maybe something that can inspire some belief the next time you get down. I think there is value in winning a game like this. Again, Louisiana Tech is not a terrible team, I don't think, yet. It's a concerning result, but waking up Sunday 1-0 is better than 0-1 in all circumstances. And I think the next time you get down 10 points in the fourth quarter, you can remember, hey, we felt like this before and we won this game. And belief is a powerful thing. Yeah. I do think that's true. So not a good Saturday for Mississippi State, but you're 1-0. And I think it can help you in the long run, even if big picture it's very concerning. Am I drinking too much?
No, you're fine. You're fine, because unlike LSU last year, Louisiana Tech defended Mississippi State properly. You know, they defended them the way you should defend an air raid team. And
Will Rogers still threw for what, 350,
370 on 47 mm-hmm. attempts. Now, that's not a great yards per attempt, but here's the thing. He looked very poised, very comfortable in the offense. They didn't panic. Those three drives were fantastic. So that is something to build on. And you know, I'm a little disappointed in a defense that I thought was going to be a lot better. I thought their defense would be fairly good. And that was Austin Kendall, by the way, former Oklahoma, former West Virginia
and
quarterback.
Yeah.
but I expected better out of Mississippi State's defense, and so that's that's the part where I think that concerns me more as they go.
I thought their defense was
they're going
be really
up against an NC State team that's pretty good. Now, NC State has a bad habit of getting out coached when the talent is equal or even less. I mean, like Dave Clawson at Wake Forest, there's a reason that game is a nightmare for NC State every year, win or lose. Like, he's a better coach. And so that's where we'll see what Leach can do here, because NC State on paper looks like the better team in this game. And so the challenge gets considerably tougher for Mississippi State. And so I want to see that defense rise to the occasion, because that was supposed to be the strength of this team. You know, you got two good corners.
Yeah, the defense far more concerning than the offense.
Cromedy at the nose is a really solid interior defensive lineman. They had to replace most of their pass rush, so they've kind of got to get that figured out. But they're going to tell us a lot this week. We'll learn a lot about Mississippi State this week, because if they play the way they did against Louisiana Tech for the first three quarters, they will lose this game by 30.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Across the state, Andy, the finale of week one in the SEC, our other friend who needs some ass. I felt bad for him. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss coach, of course. The Rebs play tonight. Their team, the only team in the conference that's 100% vaccinated, and he gets a breakthrough case. You spend so much time, you invest so much time in this team and building up for this moment, and then you can't actually participate in it. I feel really bad for him. And for whatever it's worth, Jeff Lebby will be calling plays. Lane Kiffin gave up calling plays before last season. So in terms of the game day operations, it doesn't change a ton. Not having your head coach is a big deal there. I don't think they've named an interim, have they, Andy? Did I miss this? I could have missed it.
I don't think so. And well, with Lebby and Durkin,
or I guess
I
it's acting. It's not interim or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you feel pretty – maybe Durkin makes the go for it on fourth down type decisions because he's been there before. But they have that on the staff, so I don't think that's an issue. But, yeah, somebody has to make those big picture field goal or go for it. But it's interesting because their offense has so many rules in it about when to go for it in terms of down distance and field position that I don't think that's not actually much of a head coach decision, like a gut decision by the head coach. I think situations dictate it so much for them that they don't really need to assign somebody to do that.
Yeah, you're probably right. But again, this game could have been wiped out. Matt Corral, I mean, last year, Matt Corral isn't playing in this game. He is now because he's vaccinated. And unless you show symptoms, you don't have to be tested or
Explain why. Because they're in the quarterback meeting room. Those are close contacts. So any unvaccinated person is knocked out because of a close contact. So that, I mean, and if Matt Corral's not playing this game, then basically the thing ESPN wants, the game ESPN would like to show you, doesn't happen. Because it's just not going to be the same thing. But and it would have been all court. Like John Rhys Plumlee would have had to come back and play quarterback, assuming he hadn't gotten near Lane Kiffin.
Yeah,
in a room for 15
minutes.
Which
the head coach, you never really know who he's around. Like he's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, because all of their quarterbacks would have been out.
Yeah, literally all of them. You'd have a Kendall Hinton situation.
The difference is one of their old quarterbacks does play receiver for them.
That's true. So you have, you know, again, for one, from the health aspect of it, getting vaccinated, it's great. It seems very, very unlikely he'll be hurt. But from a competitive aspect, you don't have half your team wiped out. So anyway, get vaccinated, everybody. It's good. It'll help you. I feel like that's
a good place to end. As Nick Saban says, it's a competitive advantage.
And we should all be trying to win. In life and in football. That will do it for this week's Football and Grits. Andy, it's good to be back. We got football. Oh, we got games to talk about. I think this is the first show we've done since the end of last season where there's stuff we didn't talk about because there's a bajillion things happening. And your team, they do something a little more relevant next week, we'll get to it. But it's nice. It's nice to have too much.
That middle's not a terrible place to be after week one, because the Vandy people are like,
fair enough.
I wish
LSU
you hadn't talked about us.
Yeah, I think LSU fans would have been fine if we hadn't talked much about them. But we did. And I'm sure there's plenty of talk in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and the rest of the states. But we'll be here chronicling it all, whatever the rest of the season holds. Andy, I'm sure everything you saw in week one was exactly what we all thought, and there will be no interesting...
And it'll be just like this for 12 consecutive weeks.
Twists and turns in week two, that never happens. So thank you guys for listening. Again, subscribe to the Andy Staples feed and get this show delivered directly to your device. Every Monday, myself, David Ubbin, my co-host Andy Staples, talking the SEC. This has been Football and Grits. Thank you for listening. We'll see you guys again. What day next week, Andy?
Maybe Monday.
I think it's Monday. That's when we
best day of the week. Great day to get better.
Exactly. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.